We're just going to start right now. Welcome to Future Bestseller. My name is Philip Dreyer Duncan. I am a science fiction fantasy author, and I have been in this business for a little over 10 years now. And just to start with our very first episode, I wanted to take a brief moment to talk about what we're trying to accomplish with this, and then I'll introduce my co-host. One of the things that has always been a struggle for me in the industry is just keeping up with what's changing, both in traditional publishing and self-publishing. There never really seems to be a single good source of information. And when I want to know what's going on, I really have to dig. And what we want to solve is we want to bring the news about what's happening in the writing world to a singular place. So we're going to do our best to do that. The other thing that I've noticed over the years is I have a lot of friends who are writers. I've made lots of friends who are writers. And it always astonishes me how much they don't know about the industry. Some of them will be pursuing traditional publishing, and they have no idea what's going on in the indie space. And they start talking about self-publishing, but they don't really know what to do or what's out there or the tools. People ask all the time about using Scrivener. Is that any good? We want to talk about that. We want to talk about some of the tools we use that we really, really like. And we want to bring on some really cool guests and people we know. And we also want to do a little piece towards the end of the episodes about financial independence for authors. So that's sort of the format that we're going to be going with, and we'll just get into it, and I'll introduce my co-host. First of all, J.H. Fleming, who would rather be playing Zelda than doing this right now, but she's on, and I love her for it. She is a phenomenal author. She is also a phenomenal musician, and she is also a phenomenal editor. How many books now, J.H.?
That I've written or edited?
That you've written.
I'm currently writing my 19th novel.
And she has just had a new book come out, which we will talk about in a little bit. She also, as I alluded to, does editing work. You can find her and hire her to edit your book, which I highly recommend, unless I've just finished one of mine, in which case you have to wait.
Get in line.
Get in line. And she also has a secret project coming up that I'm not allowed to talk about, so I'm not going to talk about her secret project.
Actually, we probably can, because it's only secret from my mom, and she's probably not going to listen to this, so that's
fine. I was going to definitely send your mom a link to our first episode, for sure.
Well, then edit that out.
No, it stays. It's fine. I'm not going to send your mom a link to our podcast.
Okay.
I will say, I'm going to tell the story about your mom calling me here in a minute.
Mm.
Because it was amusing to me.
Yeah, you should.
And our other co-host is my dear friend, Christopher. Now, Christopher is not an author and has really no expertise in our industry, but I wanted him on as a co-host for a couple of different reasons. For one, I worked with Chris for 5 years, Chris? 6 years? I forget now.
Pretty close to six.
Pretty close to 6 years. And he is one of my favorite people in the world, also one of my favorite people in the world to work with. And I knew when I wanted to start a project that I was like, I want to involve Chris. And I sent him a message and it was like, hey, I want to do a project. It could be this, or it could be this, or it could be this, or it could be this. But whatever it is, I want you to be a part of it. And he was just like, yeah, I'm in, whatever it is.
It's just like back at work.
It's just like back at work. I need Chris involved in everything. Which was totally my life for 6 years. That's a cool story. Let me get Chris on the call. So I'm treating the podcast much the same way, but also I think having somebody who doesn't know the industry the same way, maybe that JH and I, also let me just call out that I'm having such a hard time calling her JH instead of just her first name. I'm going to come up with a new name for you.
No,
JH is fine. So I wanted Chris to join us because not being somebody who knows a lot about our industry, he will pause us and probably ask questions that we might just glaze over, assuming everybody knows. But that's not what we want to do, because we want to educate as well as entertain with what we're doing here. So that's the group, and we can get started. So,
huzzah.
Huzzah. Dost thou even huzzah, bro? So just before we get started, I mentioned I was going to tell a story about JH's mother calling me the other day, which was quite funny. So we had an opportunity to go hang out with some of our writer friends over the weekend, and JH had a book thing she had to go do. So I stayed with our writer friends and hung out. And during the middle of the day, I looked at my phone because I had it silenced, and I saw her mom had tagged me on Facebook in a post and then texted me and then called. And I was like, oh, this must be serious. So I call her straight away thinking there's an emergency. And she's like, did you look at my Facebook post? And I was like, well, no. And I pull it up and there's a picture of a snake, and she just had a big snake in her yard. And she took a terrible photo of it and then was hoping that I could identify it for her because apparently she thinks I'm a herpetologist. I don't know.
Yeah, you're the expert in her life on snake related
things. I am JH's mother's expert on all snake related activities.
I mean, you definitely spend more time with snakes than I do.
Well, when she found out I was close by, I thought she was going to drive over and pick me up and then take me back to her. Like, I thought that's what she wanted to do. But she finally decided the best course of action might be just to leave the snake alone.
For a minute there, I thought you were going to say she's going to drive it to you.
No, she would not pick it up. Yeah, no way would she go near it or pick it up or anything.
I told her, I was like, I need a better picture of its head if you want me to help determine if it's, you know, venomous or not. And she's like, well, I was trying to get a good shot, but I didn't want to get that close to it. So I was like, yeah, just, you know what, just leave it alone. That's probably your best plan. The other thing that came out of hanging out with our writer friends this weekend is a story I started to tell Chris because I thought it was funny. And then I realized, like, no, I'm going to save this for when we're doing our first podcast. One of our writer friends, she was a librarian for like 40 years or something, right? In the same library. And she's telling me this story about this brother and sister who used to come to the library, and basically they just did weird shit, right? The sister would bring in a giant bag of mail, go to the back of the library and sort it. They didn't think anything about it at first, and it turned out it was like other people's mail. She was just rolling into the library with a big bag of other people's mail, and then I don't know what sorting it even means in that context.
Well, you know, it kind of makes sense, because if you're going to do internet crimes, you go to the library.
I mean, I guess so. The other thing that was really funny is their library cards were like revoked or had expired or something. And so they couldn't actually check out books. But when they could, apparently she would check out this Billy Graham book a lot. And when her library card expired, she would hide the Billy Graham book in the library so nobody else could find it. So she could just go in there and read it. And then they like caught him stealing books and then bringing them back and all kinds of weird stuff. And I don't know, this may not be that funny, but to me it was. And so everybody was giving me a hard time about it all weekend because they thought it was really funny. Just my reaction to it. Maybe I'm weird. But this is my favorite part of the story. The brother and sister are in the library, right? And all of a sudden, the brother just shrieks at the top of his lungs. So our friend goes over and was like, hey, you need to go outside. You can't be screaming in the library. If you want to be quiet, you can come back in. But while you're screaming, you need to go outside. So the brother turns and starts walking out. And the sister comes over and apologizes. I'm like, I'm sorry. He just had too much casserole today. Like, what does that mean? I've never been like, oh, I'm just hopped up on casserole. Sorry, I'm too much right now.
It could have been a surprise in other places that were less obvious.
That was like all weekend. It was like every time something funny happened or somebody be over the top, be like, ah, oh, too much casserole. All hopped up on casserole. You know how it is. Sunday brunch and all that. The other funny thing in the story, there was a point where the sister went into the bathroom for like a long time, like 45 minutes, and they could hear her voice coming from the bathroom. So our friend was finally like, I'm going to go check on her. I was like, something's odd's going on. So she goes into the bathroom and the lady has all the mail scattered on the bathroom floor. Now she's sorting it in the bathroom, but she's standing over all this stolen mail that she's sorting, and she's holding a Bible and reading Bible verses at the top of her lungs.
I get it.
Do
Billy
you?
Graham books, reading the Bible over the mail. She thought people were sending her money in their mailboxes.
so that she could buy more casserole. So there you have it, Christopher. That's the casserole story I've been holding over your head.
It was worth the wait.
Are you experiencing hairy feet, an adventurous itch, or butt pain? Then you should buy a copy of J.H. Fleming's latest novel, Music the Gathering, A Most Unusual Assassin. What does a fantasy novel have to do with those conditions, you ask? Nothing. But it's so damn good you'll forget all about your furry little hobbit feet. Don't wait. Buy it now and tell your doctor how awesome it is. Side effects may include
magical adventure, hours of introverted fun, great characters, tears of joy,
and death. Buy it now. What else have we been up to? We've been going to the Oklahoma Renaissance Festival, and we even managed to drag Christopher, the great introvert, out to go with us one weekend. I don't know, JH, maybe you want to talk about why we've been spending so much time at the Oklahoma Renaissance Festival?
Yeah, so I've actually been going since 2014. I'm a very big introvert, so it started off as a single weekend, and then I just kind of fell in love with the place and started going every weekend, every year after that. And then a few years back, a band called Music the Gathering started coming there and performing.
Let's play!
Yeah, let's play. They started performing, and it was funny because what actually drew me to them was when they're doing folk music, which I love, but the two songs that kind of cemented it for me were they did a folk song mashup with the Dragon Roost Island melody from Legend of Zelda Wind Waker, and then shortly thereafter, they did a cover of one of my favorite bands called The Staves, and I was like, yeah, I'm a fan of this band now, so I go to all their shows and then had an idea for a novel I wanted to write involving minstrels as the main characters and had this idea of like, okay, they have stage characters. What if I made their stage characters the protagonists of this novel? So I talked with them about it. They were super on board, really excited, and had the first book come out in 2021, and the sequel just came out this year. So it's now about to be the fifth weekend since it came out. So they're promoting it every weekend while they're there, and Phil and I are there. I'm signing books and talking with people who have, you know, writer questions and whatnot and having fun.
And I'm just looking pretty.
Yes.
And the book is called Music the Gathering, A Most Unusual Assassin.
Yes, that's the sequel book. The first one's A Most Inconvenient Curse.
And you know we can't talk about the Oklahoma Renaissance Festival without talking about chimney cakes, which
chimney
I'm
rolls.
Still really... Chimney rolls, sorry, they've been rebranded. They're no longer cakes, they are now rolls. I'm never going to get that right, ever. Sorry, chimney roll guy, you're one of my favorite people at the Ren Fair. You'll never hear this, but you're amazing. I'm really upset that I wanted to make sure that Chris, if JH is an introvert, Chris is like a forest witch who hasn't seen a town in 100 years. So we dragged him kicking and screaming to the Ren Fair. All right, it wasn't that bad. But I was like, you have to have a chimney roll. And it didn't happen. Somehow we didn't make that happen. And I'm very upset about it. So what this is it's an old, what country did it start? Do you remember?
It's either Hungary or Transylvania. They call it Transylvanian treats, but I feel like it was a Hungarian thing.
Yeah, I think it's Hungarian. So what it is imagine like you took a rolling pin and you wrapped the dough around it and then you rolled the dough in sugar and then you put the rolling pin over a grill with charcoal in it and then slowly spun it. And what happens is it bakes the bread, caramelizes the sugar, and then they use magic to pull it off of the rolling pin and roll it for you in Oreos or s'more stuff or Fruity Pebbles, maple bacon flavor, like whatever they have. And it's all amazing. I love it.
Cinnamon sugar is one of my favorites. Cinnamon sugar and
all the s'mores. Cinnamon sugar. Yeah, those are both really good. I'm the only weirdo who walks up there and I'm like, today I want no toppings. Just give it to me plain.
Just give it to me straight. Really just right in the vein.
Just give it to me straight.
It's still got the caramelized sugar on it, though. So still got a bit of sweetness to it.
Yeah, it's so good. And the bread is so soft. When we're there, sometimes we'll stay at a hotel, right? And I will just get up and we'll go to the free breakfast. And I'm just like, I will eat a plate full of eggs to get my protein and fat in. And I'm saving every carb for as soon as we get there, I'm getting a chimney roll. It's kind of a joke we have with the guy that I try to be the first person in line every day. The other thing too worth mentioning is your other favorite band at the Ren Faire.
Did we have a story we were attaching to them?
Yeah, there is a story. So I am talking about the Musical Blades, who are like a comedy pirate band. They're hilarious. And there's a really funny thing they did, and I will let JH tell you about it.
Okay, so they are actually one of the bands that have been there since before I started going, way back in 2014. I don't know how long they'd been going there before that, but once I started going regularly, they were one of the bands. I was like, okay, I have to catch them at least once a day, more if I can squeeze it in. So they do body humor, imagine like teenage boy type stuff, but it's really funny. They perform and do these shticks very well. Like, it doesn't sound rehearsed, I guess I should say. Hilarious guys. Became really good friends with one of them. Anyway, so they announced this year that they are retiring from touring. So it sounds like they're still going to make music. I don't know what else, if they're going to ever do appearances elsewhere, but they're not going to be traveling to all the various Ren Faires anymore. So they haven't been back since before COVID. And so 2023 was their first year back since 2019. And both of the Music the Gathering books had come out since they'd been back. And this year we just released the sequel book. So we went to one of their final shows of the day. I'd asked one of them, there's one song they do that is one of my favorites. It's really kind of like a high energy song. Whoever's doing the singing part has a lot of dancing and they do voices and stuff. So I'd actually asked the guy that morning if he was going to do the song that day. If so, I wanted to go see it. It'd been like super hot. So he's like, oh no, we're not going to do that. It's too much to do in the heat. Like, okay, that's fine. I understand. So we went to get food later. It was in the same area as their stage. And I guess it had gotten overcast enough that they're like, okay, we're going to do this song. They start singing it. So I was like, okay, I got to watch this now. And so afterwards, that was their final song of that set. They were done. So I walk up and I wanted to give my tip to the singer himself for doing the song. So I walk up. He's still mic'd and hasn't turned it off yet. So he takes my money. And then he introduces me to the crowd as J.H. Fleming, who did the Music the Gathering books, but now is working on the new Musical Blades novel, A Most Unusual Nipple. And it is coming soon or never, according to him.
Coming soon or never. They should get credit, too, for my line earlier, the dust thou even huzzah, bro.
That is definitely from them as well. Yes, I'm wearing their bracelet right now. But yeah, it was completely unexpected and had no idea how to respond to that.
A most unusual nipple.
You know, What's funny is if they actually did want a novel, Phil would be the best one to write that. Like, his humor would be on point for them.
I do write nipples really well.
That was the part that still sticks with me the most, was this unusual nipple person. It's one of the best sentences I have ever experienced.
All right, moving right along. The next thing I wanted to throw out there and mention, and one of the things we'll do on this podcast is we'll call out the shows and things that JH and I are going to. Right now, the next upcoming one is at the end of June, and it's called SoonerCon. And it's appropriate that I get to talk about it on our very first episode because it is my favorite convention in the world. Sorry, all other conventions. SoonerCon, if you can't guess by the name, takes place in Oklahoma, Norman, Oklahoma, to be specific, which is even more appropriate. And it is not a huge show, but it is probably the best run show I've ever been to year after year. And the folks who put it on are amazing. Super shout out to them. If you are anywhere, last weekend of June, right? Isn't it?
Yes, last weekend of June going into July.
Yeah, last weekend of June going into July. If you can make it to Norman, Oklahoma, it will be worth your time if you're a geek like us. It's amazing.
It sounds like it'd be easy to just stay over till the 4th of July to do the Norman Day.
Is that a thing? I don't know what Norman Day is.
Oh, it's fun.
Huh. Well, maybe I'll have to extend my hotel. All right. Well, we promised the news, so let's get into it. The first thing I want to talk about news-wise is not actually related to the writing industry, but it was because of the writer industry that I heard about it, and it's amazing. So I am part of a David Gimmel group on Facebook. I've been a long time David Gimmel fan, and you know, he still has lots of fans that gather there and they talk about the books and the characters and all kinds of cool nerdy stuff. But one of them posted a deal in there the other day, and it was like, this guy is basically a real life Druss, the legend. Now, if you've ever read Legend by David Gimmel, you know who Druss is. He's like his most famous character. If you don't, then I'm sorry about your reading habits. But anyway, this is a real thing that just happened the other day. And I'm just looking at my notes and I'm laughing internally that my British friends, and I do have British friends, would be very proud that I wrote it down as a football story rather than a soccer story. But basically, I guess it's like the European Conference Finals. I don't know. I don't follow soccer, whatever. But these two teams are playing. And at the end of the game, the losing side fans, they must have pre-planned that they were going to act up in some way. But basically about 100 dudes with black hoods and black face masks go to the opposing team's side and attempt to, I guess, they basically attacked. I guess there's like a special section where the families of players get to sit. And they were trying to break into that section to assumedly attack the families of the winning team's players. They were trying to attack their families. And so before the police or security or whoever could respond, there's like 100 of these dudes rushing this section intent on attacking family members. This 58-year-old man who goes by Knowlesy, if I'm pronouncing that right, stood at the top of the stairs leading into where all these families were sitting and proceeded to hold the line by himself, basically. There's another guy helping him. He wasn't completely alone. But this 50-year-old man, he was just getting punched, and they were trying to pull him down, and he was just throwing punches and kicking dudes in the head and just straight holding the line. It was amazing. And he succeeded. He held back 100 dudes until the police got involved and were able to break up the crowd and everything. It was phenomenal. That was just a few days ago. They have heralded Knowlesy as a hero. They're calling him, I don't even know if I'm going to say this right, the Angel of Alkmaar. They got him tickets to go watch his team play in the actual final. And this is the best part. Somebody made an action figure of him. And they sold it on eBay for £6,000.
Oh, wow.
It's so good.
Wait, they made an action figure within just a couple days?
Yeah, they made an action figure of him. And they sold it on eBay for £6,000.
Wow.
It's amazing. It's an amazing story. If you can find the video of it, it's amazing. You will definitely see the picture of the guy like afterwards. Like you can see, like he's an older guy. His shirt is pretty much ripped off. He's got a big black eye. But he was a total badass and was just like, nah, not in this stadium, boys. All right, my next one, and this is really great, and this one JH doesn't know about yet. When Chris and I first started talking about doing this a couple weeks ago, I was like, yeah, let's do this. This is what we want to do. And I immediately saw this and I was like, I wish we were already recording because this is such a good story. Maybe it's not, actually. Maybe I'm just a terrible person that I find humor in terrible things, but I did and I do. This story, right out the gate, I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to Google author news and see what comes back. This was the story that came back. This lady, her husband passed away, and they had three kids together. And obviously, that's a heartbreaking situation for anyone. And so she decided to write a book. A children's book about grieving the loss of a loved one. And she dedicated it to her husband, who had just passed away. And she just got arrested for his murder.
What?
Yeah. True story. This is from the New York Post. I got it pulled up. Widow who wrote grief book after husband died, charged with his murder.
So has she actually, that's amazing, like, been convicted or just arrested?
She has just been charged at this point. Let's see what it says. Mom of three, Corey Darden Richens, 33, of Summit County, was arrested Monday for allegedly poisoning her husband, Eric Richens, at their home March 4th, 2022. Like, it's over a year. They don't normally take that long, so I don't know what happened, but if you actually read the article, it gets pretty crazy. He even at one point thought she might try to kill him. Yeah, it's a bizarro story.
I wonder if she thought, like, me writing this book about grief will keep people off my trail or something. Like, how does that fit in?
Maybe I don't know, because always wanted to be a writer and needed content.
This is not a good, there are better ways to get content.
And now I have you both on record saying that, so we should be good.
So we should be safe now. Here's the crazy part too, is her book came out on March 5th, and then they arrested her a couple weeks ago in May. Super bizarre story, but that had to be our first actual news story. Now something that actually is useful for the industry. This is more pertaining to our indie friends on the self-publishing side, but Amazon just announced that they're raising their print prices for self-published titles. I was kind of looking into this. A lot of people have been talking about it. I don't think it's really that big of a deal. If you have self-published titles, you're going to want to log in and see like their release too. So it says, on June 20th, 2023 at 12 a.m. UTC, we're making changes to printing costs to better align with today's cost of materials and labor. As a result, the minimum list price for your print books, paperback and hardcover, will change. While not required, you may want to update your list prices for your print books to maintain your current royalties after the new printing costs go into effect. If you make any updates to an existing print book after June 20, it will need to comply with the new minimum list price. Please find frequently asked questions and the new printing costs below. Which is sort of weird for them to say that last part, because the system doesn't let you price the book below their minimum.
Yeah, I was actually looking into that for my own books, and it's really not that big of a change. So they have two different things they look at when they're calculating your print price as an author. When you're buying copies of your own books, that's your print price. So what it is they're actually just raising the basic cost of the price. So I just came out with a book. The basic price would be, say, we'll just go with $1, just to throw that number out there. That's just the baseline. And then from there, they charge so many cents per page. For a book that's, 350 pages, it'd be like 12 cents a page plus the dollar that doesn't change. So you take your dollar plus 12 cents times however many pages your book is, and that would give you your print costs. So all they're changing is they're raising that baseline by 15 cents. That's it. The number per page is not changing.
It's funny you said 350, because I actually pulled one of mine up and it was a 349 page book. The Moonshine Wizard novel at a size of 6x9. It shows on here that the minimum they would allow me to set it is $12.60. And the new minimum will be $12.97. To JH's point, my printing cost has gone up 15 cents. My royalty has gone down 15 cents. Here's what's weird, though, to me. They're quoting my printing cost at what was $5.04. It's going to go up to $5.19. I don't believe that's real. Like, it surely doesn't cost them that much. It feels like they kind of made up that number somehow.
I mean, all numbers are made up when you think about it.
All right, that's fair. If you've never self-published with Amazon, when you go to do a paperback and you go to publish it, you can just sell it through Amazon, and that's where you get the highest royalty rate. One of the challenges you have is they have an option for expanded distribution. So what that means is people will be able to buy your paperback through other online stores, right? And technically, I think even like a Barnes & Noble could pull your book. But I always want to like get my books priced lower, because I just don't want to be crazy. But if you want to be able to do the expanded distribution, you kind of have to raise your price a little bit, because the royalty rate is basically a fourth of what you would get just going directly from Amazon. If you want to make $1 per book sell, then I'll just give you the real number. I don't care. So on the Moonshine Wizard, I have a list price of $14.99. I will make $3.96 if somebody buys it through Amazon, but through the expanded distribution, I will only make $0.96 after June 20th, I'll only make 81 cents if somebody buys my book outside of Amazon, which is not great for me as the author, but it is what it is. If you want to be able to go that route, that's sort of what you're looking at, which I guess leads us right into our next topic, which I believe JH is going to take.
So we talked about Amazon raising their prices. Another of the big printers and distributors is Ingram Spark, and they used to charge you just to upload your book. This was before it's even published, just to upload it into their system. And then, you know, you're publishing with them. Then they also have the printing costs. So the big news there is they just as of this month removed their upload fees. So no more fees to, you know, get your book onto their system. Still have to pay, you know, whatever their printing cost is. But that is pretty big step, because I had not looked into it much until this month. I didn't even know about the fees, but I've heard just to upload your books, it was pretty crazy as far as how much it was costing.
Yeah, and I think really Ingram Spark is the next biggest platform for getting your paperbacks done compared to Amazon. So in the indie space, people who are getting their books published for paperback, they're pretty much either using Amazon or Ingram Spark. So that's pretty cool that they've removed that. There's an article I have here, and it says, also publishers get free revisions on their titles up to 60 days after the book's first production date. After a book has been in production for 60 days, if a publisher wants to make revisions to their title, they can use the IBPA promo codes to waive up to 5 revision fees per month. So that's pretty cool. The other big thing that's going on right now, and it's been going on since the beginning of the month, there is a writer's strike going on right now. And no, Chris, I'm not talking about me being lazy and not doing work, in case you were wondering.
I mean, I did have questions about output.
No, this is the Writers Guild of America, the WGA, and this is basically screenwriters. So this is from today.com, an alliance of two labor unions representing over 11,000 film, television, news, radio, and online writers went on strike. So this is similar to what we saw in, was it 2007, 2008, which the outcome was some really wonderful shows got ruined, but writers should be paid. So the reason they're on strike, so far as I've read in my uneducated study of it, and I didn't realize this, screenwriters, they get paid when one of their scripts gets turned into a TV show, movie, whatever, they get paid, but they also collect residuals off of that. Well, the streaming services haven't paid them residuals the way that network TV does. So that's part of it. And also partially timing, because obviously, AI is coming along, and they don't want to deal with this again when they're battling against AI in the near future. So they're trying to kind of get all of that worked out at once. What I've seen, the studios are not really responding. They're not even defending what they're doing or whatever. They're just kind of trying to ignore it, I guess. I have a list here of shows so far that have been impacted. I don't know if you want to hear it or not, but you're going to. Ready? Here are your shows impacted by the writer's strike. American Dad, American Horror Story, Andor, Big Mouth, Billions, Blade, Bunked, Cobra Kai, Daredevil, Duster, Evil, FBI Most Wanted, Family Guy, Good Omens, Good Trouble? I don't know that one. Hacks, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, The Hedge Knight, House of the Dragon, Jeopardy, all the late night talk shows, Loot. For some reason, the 2023 MTV Movie and TV Awards, because apparently they can't even do an award show without writers. Seems fair. Password, Power Book 2, Ghost. I don't know what that is. Power Book 3, Raising Kanan? I don't know what some of these are. Pretty Little Liars. We don't watch enough TV anymore. P-Valley. Oh, I don't want to say this one out loud. JH, plug your ears.
No, say it.
Rings of Power. That one actually says...
I already guessed that one.
Actually, that one might be somewhat okay because they were basically done. So it says they've opted to finish the final weeks of season 2 production without some of the showrunners. but I think they're actually going to finish the season, it looked like. Saturday Night Live, Severance, Sinking Springs, the other one I don't want to talk about, Stranger Things.
Oh.
Yeah, Stranger Things, the final season. The strike has halted all production on Stranger Things Season 5, the final season of Netflix hit sci-fi drama. Yeah. And then the Duffer brothers said, Duffer's here. Writing does not stop when filming begins. While we're excited to start production with our amazing cast and crew, it is not possible during this strike. We hope a fair deal is reached soon so we can all get back to work. Until then, over and out. WGA strong. The Handmaid's Tale, The Last of Us. Also, production delays for The Mandalorian. Old Man. The Penguin. So there's like everything. I'm going to stop reading the list and just say every show that you like to watch on your streaming services on Netflix, they're all impacted. In 2007, I think it lasted for like 3 months. But like I said, some of my favorite shows died as a result. I used to love a show called Life was majorly impacted. Another show called Jericho was really good that got impacted. It seems like there's one other I really, really liked I can't think of at the moment. That's a big deal, so it's worth keeping an eye on. And speaking of AI, the other fun thing that's happening, and I'm sure AI will be a topic often. In fact, that'll be a benefit of having Chris on with us, is because he's probably more interested in understanding what's going on with AI. But essentially, with the onset of ChatGPT, a lot of publishers, like magazine publishers, short story publishers, are just getting lamb blasted with short stories generated by AI.
It's not just magazines. I've seen some different agents on social media talking about it as well, like getting submissions from people using AI, I guess, to write their whole books, their queries, all of it.
Yeah, so TechCrunch did this article where they were looking at Clark's World specifically. What was interesting is they have a really cool graph on there where it shows back to 2019 to 2020, there were zero AI generated submissions. And then over the course of like the next couple of years, it was almost none. And then right at the end of 2022, beginning of 2023, they see this spike. I guess it's the January, it spikes over 100. And then in February 2023, over 500 short stories submitted. I don't know how they're determining that. Chris, do you know how somebody would go about determining that?
I know there are lots of tools that they use in academia to catch people that are using ChatGPT to generate their answers. To me, it sounds like homework. The easiest way would be to just ask ChatGPT.
That's got to be a nightmare for a school teacher right now. I've seen some of the stories. They're not that good, is the thing. They're cohesive, but they're not good, is the thing.
I mean,
and I don't.
But compared to the other submissions they were getting before, did we do a comparison there?
That's probably fair. I'm sure every editor who has ever taken on slush or open submissions for anything, they have some serious crazy stories about some of the nonsense they've gotten. So
I'm one of them.
You are. We won't say names.
Not as an agent, as an editor. Yeah. Yes.
I would love to hear some of those sometime.
We will be happy to tell you off the record. All I'll say is he ripped out his heart and handed it to him. I will say no more than that. So obviously, AI is going to be disruptive in every industry, but I think what's interesting about ours is we're seeing a lot of that disruption now just because there's so many people who are, I don't know what they're thinking really. I guess they just wanted to be a writer. Maybe they just think they're going to generate money. I know Kevin J. Anderson had posted an article where some guy was like, he made a few thousand bucks with 100 AI stories, and Craig Martell like did the math for how long the guy said he was working on them and stuff, and it worked out he'd made like less than $5 an hour using AI to generate his stories for him. For me, I think the big thing is writers are kind of like, what's going to happen? Is AI just going to take over? I don't think that it will for a very long time, because I think AI will be able to write a cohesive, grammatically correct story. It might even be able to write an intriguing one. But the one thing I don't think it's going to have for a long time is an author's voice. People read your books and they like your books and they follow you and they read lots of your books, it's because of your voice. If I handed you 5 books without a cover and didn't say who they were by, and you started to read all 5 of them, chances are you would very quickly know which one is your favorite author because they have a voice. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be really a challenge for AI to do.
Yeah, agreed.
Part of that is about the prompts that you give it. They've got people that are generating AI art. And if you give it really incredibly detailed descriptions about what you want it to put out, you can have it create multiple pictures that look like they're the same person. But I think you'd almost be better off just writing the book yourself at that point.
Yeah, right, right.
Right. Speaking for myself, like, writing can be tough. A lot of people start a first novel and never finish. And then those of us who do actually finish are able to see, even on my 19th book, each book is a challenge in itself to finish, to edit, to, you know, figure out, okay, what am I doing with this now? Am I publishing it? Am I sending it out? There's a lot of work that goes into them. So I do wonder if it's just some people who are trying to avoid that whole process. They gave up and never even finished their first novel. And okay, maybe this will be how I finally get a novel published or make a quick buck. I don't know. I'm not sure what their goal is.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'd have to lean towards the quick buck idea, because you have that with people who know nothing, who have no real interest in writing, and, you know, they don't know, like, our industry at all. They kind of think, oh, you get a book out and now you're a millionaire. So maybe there's some of that. I don't know. A lot of people will take the easiest path. Like, I've always wanted to write a book. Well, I'm just going to tell this robot what I want and have them spit it out for me.
Right.
It will be very disruptive. It will do a lot of things. I think in my mind, an earlier version of it would probably be useful for catching your typos and things. Might be able to do some of the copy editing work, like, for us.
Grammarly?
Yeah.
Like Grammarly? I mean, Grammarly's not really AI, though, is it?
I have no idea.
Pro writing aid would be better than Grammarly. My thing with that, though, would be, to any other authors who are considering that, just be careful with that, because I submit regularly to agents and magazines. And there are some who had a criteria you had to check where you didn't involve AI in any process of the book. So that would include the editing phase of it. They don't want...
Oh, that's actually really cool.
Any cheats.
That's great, actually.
The other Look, piece there is anything you upload to the AI for it to check now exists in their database. They're using it to teach, which means anything you're feeding it, theoretically, there could end up with copyright claims or some kind of other legal garbage that just hasn't been clarified yet.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good point, Chris. Do they own the IP that their machine spits out? In which case, you might find yourself in a pickle if you go publish a book you had it create, because you may not have the right to do that anymore. I'm not sure how that works either, well, but that's a really good call out.
Yeah.
There was a ruling that AI cannot own the art it produced for the ones that produce graphical images. But the other piece there, though, is all of that original work is then going to be used to generate content going forward. So you might have stuff that's derivative of your work. There was a story not too long ago about some developers uploaded some code to the AI to have it check and make sure that it was functional and it was proprietary company secrets type code,
and oh, no.
Some people got in some hot water.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's dangerous. I mean, but here's the thing. Writing, often we have to encourage our fellow writers to remember the business aspect of being a writer. Like, this is a business. You have to make business decisions. But ultimately, the product we're trying to sell is art. And I think it's probably good that the publishers are pushing back, because, like, JH's new book, I am her editing credit on it. Not that I did that much, because she's a far better editor than I will ever be, and I'm very grateful that she edits my books. But there are little things that I caught, like a little joke here or there that I thought, hey, this would be funny here. So even as an editor, I contributed to the final piece of art. She gets all the credit. It's her book. She wrote it, right? And she deserves all the credit. But the editor in this case, which was me, did contribute to that piece of art as a human. And I think that most books that come out, like even a lot of the self-published ones, it's not like a one-person show. The author writes the book, they get the credit, and they deserve it because they wrote it. But they're a team of people who help them get it to the state where, as a reader, you get to buy it. And it was like sort of a team human effort to create that piece of art and make it something that people wanted to buy. I mean, like I'll use like, Chris, you brought up Grammarly. I use Pro Writing Aid. I like it a little bit better. I haven't used Grammarly in several years. It could have surpassed it, but Pro Writing Aid is really pretty solid. It's not really like AI. It's more like algorithms to, it's like a spell checker on steroids, right?
Right. That's what I was going to say. But it can't generate content for you like the ChatGPT can. It can only edit and check what you upload to it, what you've already written.
Yeah. And it can be like, hey, maybe you would rather write this sentence this way, moron, because what you wrote is stupid. It doesn't say that, but that's how I read it in my head.
Explain why you have such trouble going through your books for editing. If you had it be nicer to you.
Right. Right. So, JH, I believe for our first little portion here to talk about our favorite tools that we use as authors, and I think I should probably just call out right out the gate, we have no sponsors. This is all bootstrapped at this point. I mean, if somebody wants to give us money, we'll take it. We'll do an advertisement as long as it's not for something too stupid. But at this point, whatever tools we're talking about, nobody's paying us to talk about them or anything like that. These are just what she and I use when we're writing and creating our content. We'll talk about some different programs and platforms. But even I have a whole bunch of junk I've bought so that I can write when we're traveling. I have a travel chair, things like that. But we thought it was appropriate to start with one of the ones we get asked about the most, especially JH. She gets asked all the time. I'll kick it over to you.
All right. This one is the writing software that I use. So back in the day, I started off writing on, I think back then it was like Microsoft Works or something like that before it became Word.
Wow. You are aging us so hard right now.
So I never really liked using that because I only had two options. I could either write the entire book in a single document, and then if I'm trying to find anything, like sure I can use the, you know, search or whatever, but if I know like a scene I'm looking for but I don't remember any keywords that would get me there, finding one specific scene in a 300 plus page document was a pain. Yes. The other option was to split up each chapter into its own document, but then you've got, you know, 30 something different documents you're trying to sort through. That's what kind of led me to Scrivener, which is the software I use now, because it lets you have the best of both worlds where I can split up. I actually do it by, I have the chapters, but then I have scenes within those chapters that are further split up. So I can get right down and, you know, each scene is sort of its own, not necessarily document, but it's like its own piece of the whole. And I can see the scenes by themselves. I can see the whole chapter. I can see the entire book at once. And I can just kind of move depending on what part of the book I'm working on. There have been some other programs that have done similar things since then. I always check them out because I'm always interested in, you know, what other people are doing with their software. But the one thing I've noticed that Scrivener still does that the others don't, and maybe they will at some point, but as of right now, I haven't found one that does, was it'll let me have, I mentioned I have the scene, so I can have one scene open and then hit a button and choose a completely different scene and have them open side by side to work in both at the same time. So maybe I mentioned something in chapter one and I need to bring it back up in chapter 20, and I can have both of those open side by side so I can work off of them. Or if I'm working on, you know, draft three and I wanted to compare chapter five, draft three to draft two so that I can have both of the two drafts open side by side. And then on top of that, they have a little quick reference box that I can pull open. So that can be yet another chapter. It can be notes or whatever. And just having that ability to have all of it open and to move between them has been amazing for writing novels. I can't imagine not having that to write novels. You couldn't pay me enough to go back to Word after using Scrivener for so many years now. That by itself is phenomenal to me. Not to mention the fact that it can do all the formatting. So if you are self-publishing, need to upload to Amazon, you can do that. It's not as friendly with the formatting, but you can figure it out if you spend some time on it. I won't talk about this one now because we're only focusing on Scrivener, but it does have options if you do need to use a different formatter. It can export directly to some other software. So it's just got a ton of different features and options.
In a world where even the Assassin's Guild has an HR, any given day can be stressful. But for Brandon, today is even worse. He's behind on bills, a joke at work, and now all his friends are out to get him. And when all your friends are assassins, getting stabbed in the back is part of the job. Strap in for a thrill ride as one man fights to survive a slip on the corporate ladder into danger. In Philip Dreyer Duncan's Assassins Incorporated.
I actually transitioned to Scrivener later than you did because my big thing was I really liked putting my stuff in the cloud because then if my laptop spontaneously combusted or whatever, I could just literally get on any machine and be right back to work. And early on, I was having trouble. So JH is on the Mac version of Scrivener, and she didn't have any problem with cloud saving pretty much all along. I couldn't get it to work for me on Windows. It was a real pain. And then the last couple of years, they fixed that. So it works flawlessly now. I have no problem putting it in OneDrive and jumping between machines and everything, which made me really happy because it really is a cool tool. Really, like at one point, she said that it was not necessarily individual files, but that's a pretty good way to think of it. It almost makes it where within a single pane of glass, you're seeing every chapter and every scene as an individual file if you so choose, or you can see it all together. And you can keep all your drafts in there. It has the formatting thing is a big deal. The first few times I self-published a book, it was an absolute nightmare to get the formatting right. It took me hours, and every time I uploaded it and thought it was right, I had to pull it back down. And I was telling her, prepare for what a nightmare this is going to be. Yeah, and I know there's probably a lot of people going to laugh at that because they're like, no, it's really easy and you're stupid. Yeah, I know. I'm pretty dumb. For her, though, when she went to do her very first one, she was all geared up that it was going to be a real challenge. And then she just did it through Scrivener and it was fine, like on her first try. So that's a huge benefit. Yeah. And there are other platforms out there specifically for that, but it's still a benefit.
Right. I was going to add, it wasn't fine, like right out the gate. I did have to play with it a bit and figure out, okay, here's where I go to make it do this. Like, say, getting the page numbers to show up in the right spot, because it'll default to one thing and you have to figure out, okay, where do I go to change that? And I don't want them at the bottom of the page. I want them at the top of the page or, you know, whatever. So it did take a little while trying to get that sort of thing figured out and get everything where it's supposed to be. Otherwise, yeah, I didn't have nearly the same problems you did trying to do it out of Word or whatever you were using.
And the other big thing, like I mentioned, I like Pro Writing Aid quite a lot. The two will work together. If you have Pro Writing Aid, you can download the Pro Writing Aid application onto your machine, and then you open your Scrivener file within it, and then it will allow you to make edits to the Scrivener through their platform. So that's pretty cool as well. Scrivener all the way at this point. I'm happy, like JH said, if somebody else has something better, we always are happy to check them out. To this point, I can't really imagine using anything else right now. It's pretty solid. And their website's what? Literature and Lattes?
Yes.
I was going to say, you probably just Google Scrivener for writers or something like that, and it'll come up.
Another cool thing I was going to add about it is you pay for it once and it's yours. There's no subscription or anything. And you get 5 licenses when you buy it, but it has to be for the same operating system. So I get 5 Mac licenses with mine, and that can be any 5 Macs. If, you know, my computer dies and I need to buy a new one, I can just deactivate it on the one I was using and activate it on a new one and pick right back up. And it's the same thing for Windows. You know, if you buy the Windows version, you get 5 licenses for that. There's also an iOS version, so I can access it from my iPod or, you know, if you're an iPhone user, same thing. But yeah, so that makes it to where pretty much always have it after you buy it the once, even if you get new devices.
Do you know, is there a way to see how many licenses you have left? Because I just activated it on another computer and I was like, oh God, I hope I have licenses left.
I'd have to look
into
it.
Spoiler alert, I did.
I don't know off the top of my head.
Hopefully I won't have to fire it up on a new computer anytime real soon. But yeah, it's cool. So I have two laptops. My main laptop that I paid too much money for sucks to travel with because the mouse pad built onto it doesn't work anymore. And if it's not plugged in, it just wants to die, which is pretty stupid because it was a very expensive laptop. So I have a different one I use for travel. And since we've been going different places every weekend, every Friday morning, I make sure that my travel laptop has all the files downloaded from OneDrive, and then I'm good. I just use it all weekend. And when I get home on Sunday night, I plug it back in and my other computer picks the files back up. So it's pretty solid. All right. Anything else on Scrivener that you wanted to say?
The rest would just be showing, but that's going to be better in a website format or something with screenshots.
Yeah, it's worth checking out. And I'm sure there's like a million YouTube videos that people can go look at. Wow, we have covered a lot more ground than I thought we might in the time, which is pretty cool. The last segment of our new show here is going to be called Creatives on Fire. And I originally had called this Authors on Fire, but then I realized there might be some other people and maybe some upcoming guests who aren't exactly writers who might want to talk in this space with me a little bit. But what I want to talk about with Creatives on Fire, there's a community out there called the Financial Independence Retire Early community. And the reason this was important to me and that I wanted to bring it to the author space and talk to my other creative friends about it is because it was really a life-changing realization for me. So I always wanted to write. Like when I was a kid, I can remember being in diapers, and I remember I had this bookmark that was like a Donald Duck bookmark. For whatever reason, whatever my mom told me, I misunderstood, and I thought that my Donald Duck bookmark was actually a magical device that would allow me to read books. I remember standing in front of the bookshelf. I was like, all right, how do I activate this damn thing? Trying everything I could think of to get this bookmark to activate its magic so that I could read. And I remember my mom coming in because I was standing there bawling my eyes out because I couldn't figure out how to make the bookmark perform its magic. And I remember this clearly because it was only a couple of weeks ago. No, it was when I was a toddler. Anyway, I was always drawn to books. That was sort of a thing. When I was 12 or 13, my dad, I mentioned, David Gimmel earlier in Legend, he'd gotten me a copy of that to read when I was 12 or 13. And I read that book and I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. I want to write books like this. That was always like a pipe dream for years and years and years. And at some point, a comic convention came to town and I had never been to one. So I decided to go and attend. And Kevin J. Anderson and Rebecca Moesta were guests at this convention, along with my now friends Tracy Morris and Brad and Sue Siner, I believe, were there. Maybe Richard Knack. I don't remember. But when I went with my friends, we were kind of looking through the schedule and they were like, what do you want to see? And I was like, well, I read Kevin J. Anderson's books when I was a kid, so I would like to catch at least one of his panels. And so this little convention had a pretty good writer's track. I went and I sat down and I listened to one panel. And that's where I stayed all weekend. And when I went home, I started writing very seriously, and I've kind of never stopped. And one of the things for those of us who've become obsessed with writing fiction, and one of the things that happens is we just, and this seems to be true across the board amongst most of my writer friends, we all are obsessed with, this is what I want to do for a living. I don't need ideas. People are talking about, like, where do you get your ideas from? I don't know, but there's far too many of them. If I could do nothing but write until the day I die, I would not cover all the ground. I wouldn't cover all the books that are in my head right now. And by tomorrow, there'll be 12 more. It's just...
I just want to interrupt for a second to add that we were talking about Zelda earlier. I just started it yesterday and not even out of the intro, and I got a new novel idea.
Yeah, like, they just come nonstop. But the thing is, we all dream of, some people I'm sure dream about really being a famous bestseller. But for me, it wasn't even being famous so much as if I could just pay the bills by my writing, I could do this all day. But then you're caught in this weird cycle where you have a day job to pay the bills, and then you don't have enough time to write. One of the things that was like, how would I know when I'm making enough? When is the point where you're making enough that you can stop your day job and just focus on the writing? I never really had an answer to that. I had a pretty long career in one area with one company, about 12 years. And going into that 12th year, the boss I'd had for basically that whole time, he got laid off after 38 years to this company. And that was a very eye-opening moment for me. I realized not only am I obsessed with chasing this dream, but the thing that I use to pay the bills isn't even secure. So at any moment, this could be me. My job's not secure. It maybe never will be. And so that really changed things for me. And I started, I've got to get rid of all my debt and I've got to live on less and figure this thing out. And so that sort of led me to learn about the FIRE movement. And I wouldn't really consider myself a part of that or an expert in any capacity. I'm not a financial advisor or anything like that. But what I realized was the information that comes out of that group, one of the things that it shows you is actually there's a way to sort of calculate how much money you need to retire today. There's a way to calculate that. There are strategies around how to invest and how to aim towards that goal. And I want to marry that concept with what we do as authors. As we crack along, that's what we're going to talk about. What I know about making money as an author, what to watch out for, how to deal with contracts and promotions and things like that. But on the other side of it, what's the strategy to aim towards that dream of writing full time? Because what this really is, for me, is a second pathway to achieving my dreams. So I don't have to necessarily just become a New York Times bestseller. Obviously, only a handful of people ever get to do that. And if I can, amazing. If I can't, it's not my only option. I don't have to become Stephen King in order to be able to pursue writing full time. There's another way to get there, and that's what this segment is really going to be about. And again, I will say that I'm not a financial advisor. I'm going to talk about what I do and how I view things. It's not necessarily advice you should take without talking to an adult. All right, that's really all I wanted to cover on that today, was just sort of that preface that we're going to talk about it. We're going to call it Creatives on Fire, even though originally it was Authors on Fire. JH was smart enough to point out that was maybe not the best title if I was going to bring people from other industries in to talk with us. So, and it's really open to everyone. I want it to work for artists and musicians and everything else. All right, I think that is our first episode, guys.
Woohoo! Huzzah!
Huzzah indeed.
Thou even huzzah.